say a few things about myself. I told you, my name is Shanti Ross, and actually I work for the Fire Brigade in Hampshire, and I've been there for the last 12 years. And during that time, I spent 9 years of that as an equality and diversity advisor. In the last 3 years, I've got the role of a fire safety inspector. So what I do actually now is I enforce the fire safety orders. Now, you might wonder, like me, what the hell am I doing here talking about social mobility? When I get the answer, I'm going to email it to you all again. Look, so I thought that the reason I asked Tony to ask me to go first is that I want to put a bit of context into it so that I can leave it to my distinguished guests here to open the debate and what have you. So that I can shout, Tony. For those of you who are not familiar with the term social mobility, I think this has been going on for a number of years, actually, in different guises. You know, we talked about social class, etc. I remember when I studied economics in Manchester, going back 1968-69, about the lack of people from the working classes in higher education. And it's still going on, isn't it? Nothing's sort of changed to that extent. So let me start by taking a leaf out of Tony's book. I'm going to do a lot of quotations here, actually. For example, social mobility now, as it stands, is about getting the best start in life for people who come from a poor background and has a difficult issue for successive grants. I mean, recently we had, according to a recent research program, not recent actually, in 2005, by the London School of Economics, suggested that there was an overall decline in social mobility in the UK between 1958 and 1970. Now, who were the beneficiaries during this time? If you go back to the people who kind of moved forward during this period were from the middle classes. Well, obviously they had the clout, and they managed to access education and did good jobs as well. And what they found was that if you're from the middle classes, well-educated and had a good income, it kind of trickled down into the next generation. So nothing's changed, has it? We were talking about the big society and what have you. Another piece of research also suggested that children from poorer backgrounds did not benefit from any of the changes that were going on in society, like the expansion in higher education in the 1980s. And the trend since has been sort of carrying on like that. I can't even read my notes here. Now, if you look back, the current government has produced what you call a strategy to tackle what you call permanent social segregation. We acknowledge that failure to achieve in early years can affect social mobility. So in the latest report, going back to 2010, by the National Equality Panel, on social mobility concluded that moving up a ladder is harder if its rungs are further apart, and those who start higher up fight harder to ensure that their children do not slip down. So that is exactly what the position is. From that, I'll pass on to my district guest. You have to carry on.
Thanks. Hi, everyone. My name is Colin Trotman. I'm head of the Department of Adult Continuing Education at Swansea University, sometimes otherwise known as the People's Republic of Swansea. Those of you that were here yesterday evening and listened to the keynote speaker, where he declared his commitment to adult education and why, when he said that he'd left school at 15 with no qualifications and so forth, and I had no intention of upstaging him last night, but because he's not here today, I intend to. That's my commitment as well. I was a drama school boy and I was family at first. I left school at 15, completely and utterly alienated from the process. I hated it. I hated my teachers. I followed my dad into the coal mining industry. And then, much in the same way, I'm not putting myself alongside the great Irene Bevan, who said my education started the day after I left school. It's just that happened to me as well. Through my union, the National Union of Mine Workers in South Wales, I re-engaged with education and suddenly became aware of global political system, things that the school never touched upon. And from that kind of education, I have an absolute resonance with the experiences of my family, the history of the working class, and so forth. So that's where my commitment is. That's what it lies. And need I say, I'm absolutely committed to it. In terms of Wales, I mean, there are some differences with our guests from other countries need to appreciate it. We have devolved government in Wales, and we've had so for at least the last 8 or 9 years. So we've been devolved from Westminster. We've had the barrier in place between us and the excesses of Westminster government, but I mean, there's never been a better time for us to have that barrier in place, given the policies of the Conservative-led so-called coalition. So that barrier stands in place, and well, from where I'm standing, I'm quite openly admit the fact that the Labour Party, with all its faults, and I've been a lifelong member of the Labour Party, the Labour Party, with all its faults, is in government in Wales, and this time is really not in coalition with the Welsh Nationalists. Now that's been very, very useful for us in our education. I've always been a political animal, I've always felt the need to be, and much of the policy that's in place today, we've spent the last 15 years working on voting. I mean, mine is a lonely voice, my colleagues' voices are lonely. 10 years ago when we were saying the resources of the university must be liberated for the good of the people of the region. Nobody wanted to hear that. The only echo that I could hear was from Michael Crowe, who was from, which universities are in the States, but I mean, that sort of idea was certainly not shared by my Vice-Chancellor, but it's shared by others, thankfully. So in Wales, things have been driven by the Welsh Assembly government, and the major policy document is one of the Four of Futures. But the Four of Futures policy document is more than a guide. It lays out the job that the current Minister for Higher Education, Leighton Andrews, sees for higher education. That policy document has twin pillars. The first, and in this order actually, the first is social justice, and the second is a buoyant economy. And I mean, the buoyant economy bit is massively problematic. I said in my presentation earlier, I'm one of the biggest cynics in terms of workers learning skills for employment, employer engagement. But South Wales is dominated by public sector jobs, which are going to disappear at the rate that not are. The situation is going to get much worse. So really, I find it easy, and quite honestly, I mean, openly admit, I find it easy to engage with the social justice pillar of those twin pillars, because it matters the most to me. Now that policy is absolutely widely access focused. It deals with underrepresentation in higher education, with non-participating social groups. It spells out the need for pathways of progression to higher education from the community, from isolated communities, from the workplace. It dealt with part-time adult education, with adults in particular. I've become a Leighton Andrews groupie. Every keynote speech he gave in Wales last year, I lacked it. Deliberately standing up, asking questions, so they got to know my face. And to get, more importantly, to get that sort of commitment out of him. And I mean, in terms of art and education, I asked him how important it was on his agenda, and he said, and he's quite a different animal, and I've got a great deal of time for him. He's actually an intelligent politician. That's fairly rare. I mean, there have been others. So he's... The other focus on that Common Futures document is communities first. There have 100 most deprived communities in Wales, and that's where the policy is directed at. Communities first has been taken as a robust proxy for social class. And I've almost finished. Minister is very forceful, very committed to shaking up higher education, and made some very positive warning signs to HE, Strike HE, the last bastion of the old boys network in South Wales. He sees community development as essential to secure social change, and in that sense shares that radical agenda for adult education as Tom Lumber from McGee used to promote. So in the Welsh context, HEIs are not simply geographically located in Wales, but they're of Wales. And they're publicly funded, and that's the way that message really. They must now work for Wales. And this term of office, the emphasis is going to be on governance and HEIs. How they're working, how the Welsh government how people are appointed and so forth, and that's caused some problems, I can tell you. The other thing, quickly, Tony, if you bear with me, is the difference between us and England especially, is the fee plans. The fee plans have been submitted. The HEIs were told that unless there was clear alignment and clear commitment to the wider access agenda, they'd be refused. That HEIs would not be allowed access to the 9K fee structure that they're all going to put in place. So that was positive. But again, we can only test that when they become public and we can see how much widening access is written into them. The problem is, this is my last sentence, the problem is that in Wales currently, the institutions can increase the fee to 9K, they're all going to do it, absolutely, of that there's no doubt. That means the Welsh Assembly government is picking up the difference between what is currently 3,300 and the new 9K fee, 5,700 for student debt. The real issue for us is how sustainable that is. And even if that is sustainable, there are going to be impacts on part-time adult education. And then last week, with no consultation whatsoever, we were told that in quite a positive spin manner, that our part-time students were now going to be given equity with full-time students in that loans would now be available for them. The issue there, of course, is, and since I've been here, I mean, you were as a part of the network in Wales, we decided we'd respond to the Minister directly, and we've been writing that by email since I've been at this conference. To say that there's no equity between part-timers and full-timers is good. Is good, but the point is, we're fearful that all of the support structures, the fee waiver, the local authority grants and so forth will disappear, which would make recruiting disadvantaged students next to impossible. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'll take 3 minutes, hopefully. Just because some context in relation to Northern Ireland as well. We have probably, this is the second term of a fully functioning Northern Ireland Assembly, and social mobility is very high. Social mobility is very high on the agenda, or so they say. Really what they've said is that they really want to build the Northern Ireland economy, that's the number one priority. But they want to go hand in hand with social inclusion, and that's great, and it's one of the sound bites, and almost every party has said that and has signed up to it. So when faced with choices, what actually have they done in reality? They've cut the block grant to higher education by about 40%, and they are saying that tuition fees can increase to a maximum of 5K. The difficulty with that, again, is that we have two universities in Northern Ireland, Vice Chancellor, are looking very closely at this, and they're already saying, well, you know, 46% of students from lower socioeconomic backgrounds already when they both universities within Northern Ireland. So really, we're already doing good work in that area. Now, when you look at further down some of the social classes, we're not really doing as well as we think we're doing. But there are choices being made, and the choice that will be made, potentially, is that widening access activity will be curtailed or will be cut back. And you may actually say, well, you know, if you're sitting at 46%, that you're doing pretty good. Yeah, okay, we accept that. But there are stubborn pockets of resistance. There's underrepresentation across most of our social classes in relation to education and in relation to disability. But the tough choices are going to be made, and the tough choices, I guess, it's the same in most regions, are around finances. And if you ask me, well, you know, you're doing well already, what difference will it make? I mean, that's an absolute fact. Some of the work that we're involved in, we've taken around about 1,200 students through a programme called Step Up. And that's 1,200 students who would never have gone into higher education. And they've come out to be solicitors, to be biomedical scientists, to be airline pilots. And those are guys that our education system, our secondary education system, failed. They wanted to leave school at 16. We managed to hold them in the system and to make a difference to over 1,000 young people. That's the difference we'll make if people make choices simply on the basis of funding. So it is, I think, in all the regions, it's going to be a very tough time ahead. And Colin's absolutely right. The influence we have on the political leaders is going to be absolutely crucial across all the regions. And I think it's something that's part of the forum we have here in Fife. It has to be a collective response.
Okay, I'm not going to stand up. I'm going to stay sitting. Social mobility, I think one of the First thing I'd like to say is I don't really understand, or does anybody really know exactly what you mean by social mobility? I come from Northampton, sorry, my name's Deirdre Linsky, and I'm Assistant Director at Aim Higher Greater Merseyside. I came from Northampton. My mum and dad were both, well, my mother came from Ireland, from a farm in Ireland, worked as a nurse and worked her way and did everything that she could for her three children, and as a response I was the first one to go to university. I live in a terraced house in Liverpool. I don't live in a lovely house like my mum does. So in terms of social mobility, have I really moved up in the world? I would say yes, I have, because I think social mobility is a state of mind. I think that what I've got, what I've had, the opportunities that I've had and the people that I've met is about social mobility and challenging ideas and challenging thoughts. So I thought that's the kind of the first thing I'd like to kind of put into the melting pot. So as a colleague and I've been discussing, so social mobility is about moving up, but it's also about moving down. So that's something to think about. I'd also, what I do as well within Aim Higher, we do an awful lot of work with low-income young people to raise their aspirations to think about going on to higher education and to be socially mobile. But also at the same time saying you don't have to leave your comfort zone, you don't have to leave the city that you live in, you can stay. I'd like to kind of put that out to the audience and to get you to think about that, because what does that mean in terms of social mobility? I'd also like to talk to you as well about the fact that I do a lot of work with looked after children. And if you have had a rubbish life and you manage to get 6 C's at GCSE from a school that is one of the lowest attaining schools in your area, and you want to be a medic, you probably won't get there because you've got 6 C's at GCSE, because all the medical schools will want you to have at least A's and A stars, even though you are probably capable of getting to be a medic. So again, in terms of social mobility, I just want to put these things out to you, really. And finally, because I think my 3 minutes is up, in terms of fee increase and the cost of higher education, again, one of the things is that people who were socially mobile, who are now in positions of power, make decisions that affect people like they were. So I went to university when I didn't have to pay any fees, yet the people that are making the decisions went also to university for free and are now, you know, like charging or making decisions to charge that. So they're just a few things to think about.
My name's Margaret Cameron. I'm one of the managers at the SCQF Partnership, which runs our national framework, and I'm certainly no expert on social mobility, but I see it because I see it. I think we've come a long way from the time where, from institutions such as this, there was volunteers went out from this institution into the communities to teach people how to read and how to write, and that there was debates in Parliament where education was not really seen as for the benefit of the masses, really. There was debates there about whether, you know, if they educated the people, that they would become a buffer station, that they would become fractious. And it seems to me that over the years, we've developed our education system, we've become better at that, but still education and higher education was seen for, certainly by me, was not for the likes of me. And it was still the prerogative of the rich, it was the elite, it was the 10%. And then you had people like you and like me who started to develop programs, say that this is a right for people, this is what we should be educating our people. And we then started to develop programs to increase the number of people who were attending university and to colleges. And that these programs, such as Aim Higher, they've become successful over the years. And education, we did this because we saw that education was to be the means of going up that social ladder to increase the social mobility of individuals. There were programs that there to help, and you could see the number of people increasing from first-time people into, you know, from families attending the university sector. And countries developed, and I have to relate it back to national qualification frameworks, I'm sorry about that, but this country, Scotland, developed the ScotCat system and the higher education system, and that's how I became involved in returning to education as an adult, having had my 5 children, having lots of experience of running businesses, etc., but thought there's something missing from my life. I need to have this qualification, and was able through a credit system to work and gain a degree, and then went on to master's programs. And this was done, and I have, from that, I have benefited. And we heard yesterday from Jean McFadden from the that she went into the classroom with the young people to increase her knowledge. And that's what I did. In order to get my hires, which is a Scottish Leaving Certificate, I went into the classroom with young people. And now all these programs have gone. It's not possible, and you heard yesterday from Jean that there's, you cannot now, adults, not go into the classroom because you're regarded suspiciously. We now face also a cull in the programmes such as widened participation programmes, such as Aim Higher, and the programmes that my colleague Paula Cleary has been involved in the wider access forums. The cull in adult education is just terrible. And we talk about this new buzzword, this widened participation, as far as I can see, has been refocused to this social mobility. And I'm not sure just what social mobility is. We're at a time when we are facing limited finances. We have a reduction on the provision of education. We have a destruction of the programmes such as Aim Higher. We have a loss of our adult education programmes. We are at a position where people who are not in employment are being blamed, a blame culture. But there's no, excuse me, there are no, there are no jobs. The jobs are going, you talk about wheels where the jobs are within the sector. It's absolutely shocking. And I just think that we are now going back to a situation where, and of course within your, not within Scotland, and the Scottish Government has vowed not to bring in tuition fees. How long that will be sustainable is a question. But within other parts of the UK where the tuition fees are absolutely going through the roof, it just seems to me that we're going back. We talked about the volunteers. Well, we had that 200 years ago. Education, it seems to me, is just going to become the prerogative of the rich. And mobility, social mobility, implies movement, not just up the way, but down the way. And I really, really, really fear for the generation. I think that we are going to be responsible for a generation that is just lost and hopeless. And I really fear for that. I think it's terrible. And that's my view on the social mobility.
Now it's your turn.
Hello, my name is Paula Cleary. I now work with Margaret Cameron at the SCQF Partnership. I was formerly a senior programme coordinator at the West of Scotland Wider Access Forum. And my question is about, two people have already said they're not quite sure what social mobility is. In Scotland, I think what my interpretation of what's happening at the moment is that the terminology widening access is ceasing to be used. By people I mean politicians and ministers, are speaking increasingly of social mobility. And my question is really, does the panel think there is a difference between widening access and social mobility? Are these terms the same, or do they mean different things? And what are the implications of the changing discourse if we moved towards talking about social mobility?
I'm Karina Berzins from the University of East London. And my question is around social mobility and geography, and that picks up on some of Deirdre's comments. Coming from some of the research I've done in East London boroughs with younger learners, we've had some successes in getting non-traditional students into higher education, and then they get a degree and move away from their local communities. So I guess my question is around, how do we embed social mobility into local environments, into impoverished communities, so that this pursuit is not just for individuals, but helps the social mobility of these local communities?
Thank you. did sociology as an adult student, both for my first degree and for my my PhD in social mobility. For me, I mean, the accepted definition was moving from one social class upwards, hopefully, to another. But so, I mean, social mobility is important to us because the politicians are banding it about. Whether they fully understand what they're talking about is debatable. But I mean, we have to use some of this stuff and use it against them. I mean, the likes of Cameron and so forth talk greatly about social mobility and the big society. There's an Australian wine called Big Kahuna, and I think that's about as rude as I can get in terms of describing the big society as the Big Kahuna. So social mobility, I mean, there was an OECD piece of research that was published about a month back, I think, or less, which showed that the UK is at the bottom of that social mobility league table. So that's not looking too good. But I think what's more important for me is widening access and the benefits of having gone through the higher education system. And it's about empowering communities, and it's about increased citizenship. These disadvantaged students that we all talk about are often not just alienated from education. They're up against a system over which they have very, very little control. And it's moving them from a position of powerlessness to a position whereby they have exercised greater control over their lives. And that's the other wider benefit of learning in terms of adult education. It's the person change. And if you look at the sociological evidence, you'll see that in terms of, say, the National Health Service, those who are best at using it and getting the most out of it are the middle and upper middle classes. And the people who really need it aren't. So that's what it's about largely for me, social mobility, widening access. I can see more.
I think having listened to my colleagues here, actually, I'm not so sure that this kind of responsibility can just remain with the state. I think for me, actually, coming from the fire brigade, I think as part of the fire brigade, I'm doing what I can to encourage people from various groups to access some damn good jobs. You know, firefighters these days, I mean, they might disagree with me with all these shenanigans going on about pensions and what have you. It's still a damn good job, actually. And it starts from a very low level, and there's right throughout the career of a firefighter, there's intense training, and they can start as a firefighter and go to reach the job of a chief. And the chief earns these days, depending on the size of the fire authority, can earn up to 160 grand. I mean, it might be pittance in many respects in compared to the private sector. However, that's a damn good job. So I have done this kind of thing in terms of, I come to, you remember I came to Solent University promoted. It was not part of my job to do that. I've been to Portsmouth University trying to encourage, particularly students from women and people from BME backgrounds, to start looking seriously at the fire brigade, because those are opportunities. To me, that is enhancing the prospects of what I call getting a good job. If you're looking at social mobility, what they're saying is we had widening participation and various other interventions, and there were a lot of people who did succeed. Actually, they went to university and got a HE qualification. However, when you went to the job market, they were getting low-paid jobs. And what I've just used some statistics, actually, from the government, actually. If you look at professional occupations are dominated by the privately educated, vice chancellors, and don't forget, 7% of the population attend independent schools, vice chancellors, 24%, MPs, 32%, top medics, 51%, top journalists, 54%, FTSE 100 chief executive officer, 54%, top barristers, 68%, High Court judges, 70%. That's a damn statistic, isn't it? So what chance have you got? I think that responsibility lies, I think we need to work more closely with employers as well. I've been saying to Faith for the last 10 years that we have missed a trick or two, actually. We've been just concentrating around education establishment. I think we should have gone out to a lot of large companies and tried to persuade them to start doing a bit of social mobility, if you like.
And just reflecting on Paula's question with regard to, is widening participation the same as social mobility? I mentioned in my rant that I was one of the, in my family, I was the first person to go to university as an adult. I did that. But I was not by any means disadvantaged. In fact, I came from a very privileged background. My mother was a businesswoman in Glasgow. and I had to ask her for pocket money because I was never skint and I wanted to be the same as my friends. So this aspect that widening access is only for disadvantaged people, I think it's not completely right. I just didn't feel that university was for me. It was something that somebody else went to. I wasn't clever enough to do that. It was nothing to do with funding or money or anything else. And I think there is a difference between widening access and participation and social mobility. I'm not sure about all of this community stuff, because whose community? I live in an area now where I don't know the people who are my neighbours, and I really worry about this kind of the community influence, because surely it can be those that speak the loudest that make the most gains, and those that can be sitting at home maybe not making as much noise as the others then have. So I kind of worry about that, and I'm not quite sure what empowering communities mean, because I think it's about empowering individuals.
Okay. Well, we'll hear from the rest of the panel on some of the other questions, if that's okay. Can we have another question or comment? The lady over here, could you? And then we'll come to you after that, sir.
Hi, yeah, I'm Louise Sheridan, work in the School of Education within the University of Glasgow. There's a couple of things, I suppose, as we teach on the BA community development, and I think we feel fundamentally that we want an emphasis on collective action and people working together, and not just about empowering individuals. But just something that Deirdre said struck a chord with me and reminded me of something one of our students said a few years ago when they had to do a visit to the field, and it happened to be, it was regards to looking at the space and the city and how places can be hegemonic or not. And one student came back having visited Princes Square, and it's on Buchanan Street if you've not been there. This student, I remember, was from the east end of Glasgow and said she felt very intimidated about going into that building. And she said, that's not for me. She thought, before she went in to visit that place is not for me. And so I guess I'm saying, I think that social mobility is very much about a sort of state of mind, but it's about the messages that are given to people to say, actually, Princes Square is not for you because of the views and attitudes from others. And I think we have to kind of reflect back on ourselves and say, you know, the language that we use, the way we've set things up and so on, perhaps we are part of that kind of hegemonic structure. So we just, that about being reflective is very important. Princes Square is for everybody. And my dad helped to build it. And never, a working class man from the Gorbals, never would have dreamt that he was building something that somebody thought, that's not for me.
Daniel Khan from OCN, Open College Network, London. I'd like to say, Margaret, I loved your passion, your speech. I share a lot of those political views with you, because I really think there's a serious problem in the UK with some of these implementation of fees and funding cuts for adults. But what I just want to throw out to the panel is, while we could, you know, lobby the government, and I'm doing that heavily for access to HE programs, which is one of our big programs in London, the reality is there will be further public sector cuts in the UK. And I just wonder if, when we come to communities, local councils should be more proactive, because what seems to happen is that they concentrate on just what's statutory that they have to deliver legally. But surely, in terms of community, widening access, social mobility, to me, local authorities have a major role and responsibility. And is it something that maybe we need to do more of to try and convince councillors, local government, that this community aspect of education development is relevant to their needs, even though it's not statutory anymore in terms of adult education.
And I will go on about Aim Higher, and I'll probably go on for Aim Higher forever. But in terms of local authorities, you know, local authorities had funding to deliver Aim Higher activity. Aim Higher was a partnership between universities, local authorities, and colleges. And so that there isn't any money now because the Aim Higher funding is gone, but they had, you know, a dedicated person within the local authority that could then be the conduit to schools and colleges and to get that message out. And unfortunately, because of the cuts, they can only do what is statutory. Again, one of the a big issue with me is about, you know, the provision for looked after children. Looked after children's LACES teams, education teams and virtual schools are being slashed, you know, in a lot of authorities, and only the very, you know, skeletons of support is being provided. They haven't got any funding. They haven't got any money to do that. So I agree with you, but I don't know what the answer is. And I think the answer is partnership. It's about kind of people taking responsibility and saying we have a responsibility to do something, and to put resource in. It doesn't have to be money as such. It has to be a resource. It can be people. To put things together and get things done, but unfortunately, I can't see at the moment that happening. And can I just say about empowering communities as well? Because I do think that schools have an awful lot of responsibility in that respect, in terms of raising aspirations of young people and their families. In terms of, you know, one of the messages in terms of when I talk about Aim Higher is, you know, university isn't for everybody. We're not saying that. What we're saying is that everyone should know that university is an option, and they need to find out about it so they can make that choice. And so therefore, nobody has the right to say, oh, that university or that particular progression route isn't for the likes of our children. And that, unfortunately, is said continually.
I mean, except the question, the point you made, for me it's bigger than that. I think, you know, it's a government responsibility in relation to providing educational opportunities. And if you want to know what's the cost of doing nothing, then look at Northern Ireland. Effectively, not all the problems, but a lot of the problems that grew up in Northern Ireland and around the Troubles were in relation to inequitable opportunities in education. And we could very easily develop strands of underclass who have no opportunity in relation to education. And where's that going to go? I mean, we all suffer as a result of that. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I think, you know, not everyone will go to university, nor will everyone want to go to university. But that opportunity has to be there. And at every level of education, the opportunity has to be there. Or the consequences are there for us all to suffer. And I think the big picture is this is government. This is something that government has to fund. And, you know, we've almost, I think, over the years, we've accepted that we have to pay for higher education. And I think maybe we accepted that too readily.
It goes, I think, much deeper than that. I think, as a society, this is still a class-ridden structure in a British society. And we are not a fair society either. Actually, the whole issue is around fairness, I think. And it was touched upon yesterday, today, a couple of stuff you're doing, trying to build people's confidence. Why do you have to do this, actually? Because people feel disenfranchised, if you like, and they still struggle to start moving on whichever ladder they choose to climb. And there's a fundamental issue. I think we need to grasp that, actually, and say we have equality legislation. Has it worked? Why did we need legislation? And this government is actually diluting the previous legislation. They're not taking on board the specific duties they talk about general duty. I think these are fundamental issues, actually. We shouldn't be pussyfooting around. I think we should stand up and say, if you do mean equality, let's start work at it. I think it's a very fundamental issue, actually. We can talk about local authority. I totally agree with you, actually. 10 years ago, we had community development officers. Do you have them now? It's not the flavor of the month. It seems to be coming back again, actually, through the big society agenda, if you like. You know, I think it's a question about fairness in society for me.
Yeah, it's not just about higher education for us as a department or for the sector in Wales. It's about us all working together. So we work with our primary schools. We work with our primary schools in relation to, of course, adult students and also parents of the kids in the school. We work with FE and so forth. But in terms of the debate, social mobility, widening access, I mean, HEIs are elitist institutions. I mean, the social class profile is still predominantly in favour of the upper classes, and that's not right. That's not right, because they do have a monopoly over places in higher education, but clearly they don't have a monopoly over intelligence or ability, and that's the point. So it's about providing those opportunities, supporting non-participating groups, the historically non-participating groups, to take up those opportunities if that's what they want to do. And I'm really comfortable with that. I want to change the social class profile of the professions. I want to see more solicitors from different social classes. I want to see more doctors. Look how elitist medical schools are in the UK. It's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace. They don't have a monopoly over ability. I mean, the medical professionals themselves are complaining that they're recruiting from one or two social classes to take care of the needs of everybody else across all the other social classes. How stupid is that? It is stupid. Anyway, so that's what it's about. Well, I think it's stupid, but enough for me.
Everybody probably here knows the work of Eric Cobsbawm, the historian, and the famous phrase that he said, the forward march of Labour halted in the 1970s. I think, unfortunately, I think we're probably in a position that now the forward march of Labour reversed. And I think that's probably the reality of the situation if you look at global economic trends. And if you look at the share of the income for the working and middle class in America, increasingly here, if you look at the inequalities that have emerged in the UK over the last 30 years, we are to some extent in a position of reverse in terms of widening participation and access to education. So a couple of reflections on that. Firstly, there's been quite a lot of doom and gloom. And possibly that's inevitable in the sense of where we are in terms of the funding cuts and of course a very major strike going on today relating to pensions for those who work in the public sector in the UK. So there's a couple of points really. One, I think we've absolutely got to continue with all the various initiatives, some of which have been presented at some excellent workshops at the conference, both already occurred and in the future, in terms of building on the work of Aim Higher and learning from all those initiatives and structures and what has worked. I think it's important that we build on those legacies and we don't lose that history and we don't lose the knowledge that we've learned from that, and we continue to do that, point number one. But point number two is, I just wonder, in the context of a changed world, in the context of possibly the UK and Europe looking at something quite different 30 years' time because of the global changes which are occurring, is I wonder if we ought to raise our aspirations and not thinking about the target of 45-50%, but actually thinking about 70% of our young people moving on to some kind of tertiary education. And that we need to build alliances with appropriate organisations such as FACE and others, and NIACE, for example, and the NUS, to name several. Okay, so as an overarching alliance that is pushing the case for significant increase and a move to a real mass higher education system, which is going to look different than what it is presently, and it is going to mean learning in the workplace is going to mean capturing learning in different places, yeah? And when we talk about having an elitist system, yeah, that is very much based, as colleagues have said, around a history of elitist universities, yeah? And we've all been banging on this about a long time. For me, I think, I'm nearly finished, for me, I think, is that we need to broaden it, we need to capture tertiary level learning in a whole range of agencies, and we need to put in place a proper credit and qualification transfer scheme, and that would give real opportunities to young people and adults in the workplace. So I think we need to think much broader, as well as continuing with our more narrow WP and Access work. Thank you.
Andrew Rawson, Action and Access. I'd agree, actually, with what the last speakers just said very much, especially the notion about credits. And the fact that if we're going to have a mass higher education system, we have to deliver it in different ways, and the elitism of institutions has to be, to some extent, perhaps broken. But the point I was actually going to make was try to bring us back to the round table. And I was going to say, if we accept that social mobility means something like widening access and participation and social justice, then can the panel actually, we've had lots of examples of how the UK government's not doing that, can the panel actually give us some examples of where they think the UK government's actually going in the right direction?
Just a couple of points. First of all, I think it's really important to recognise that whilst we're talking about widening participation, it's about you're asking people to come into something all the time. I think it's really important that we go out to people and start working at with them where they are. One of the things that we really need to work on is about aspiration and have community members as mentors showing what it is to learn. But that's not the same as a qualification. That's not the same as being educated. It's about learning. It's about seeing that as an entitlement that everybody should be entitled to learn what they want and when they want. And that's not the kind of world we live in, but I think it's the world that we should live in. I think it's desperately important that universities see the benefit of having adult returners as part of their institution. Because when I came to university as an adult returner myself, there was a Department of Adult and Continuing Education that no longer exists because of restructuring. But I liked the fact that I wasn't called mature like some bit of cheese, that I was actually called an adult and was treated as such by the staff, and that the learning that I was bringing with me and the experience I was bringing with me was respected and incorporated into my learning. I think that's vitally important as well. But I think aspiration raising and treating everybody from whatever background as if they have got potential to do something, that's what social mobility should be about expanding the person, not because you want to expand the GDP or you want to see that their socioeconomic thing has been raised, but they as a person have grown and are widening their ability to connect to the world globally.
Steve Kendall from the University of Bedfordshire. I'm very disappointed you didn't take me directly after Nick Davey, because then I could have said I agree with Nick. Although the other Nick, rather less so. And actually, I want to just pick up on what Damien said about this being a government responsibility, because we are at the moment in England where it ceases to be a government responsibility to fund higher education, and that's an extraordinary watershed, it seems to me, in the development of the education system in this country. The thing that I keep worrying about while we're talking about social mobility is that I keep getting this image in my mind of a society which is more mobile, where things are whizzing up more and whizzing down more, but where there is no narrowing in inequality. Because I don't understand, you know, sort of on the face of it, why more mobility necessarily implies less inequality. And I can imagine a society which is more mobile, more volatile, more unequal, and in which there is less opportunity. So I'd be interested in the views of the panel as to how we can ensure that we continue to, or we reinstate, terms about fairness, access, and opportunity into the social mobility agenda.
We wanted to do a round table, and of course I know it's not very round, but thank you for the question. I'm going to go to the panel to each make, to pick up whatever they want from that, but each make a final statement.
I'm going to pick up, it won't be surprising to you, to the on the national framework and the national credit framework that was talked about, and about the education system. Within, I can talk about the Scottish system because it's quite a different system to the rest of the UK in terms of it has the facility to include non-formal learning, not just the formal qualifications that we offer. And within the Scottish education system, we have the Curriculum for Excellence, which is about recognising achievement. And it's about having that recognised in the same way as on the qualifications framework, as in the same way as the national qualifications. And at the moment, and this is where we were talking about government doing things right, but at the moment, although we're not part of government, they're developing toolkits for young people to go into schools to help with the recognition of their learning that's not come from the school programme, that they're learning in other ways, in order to map that to the framework, to give them the sense of achievement and to recognise that achievement. And I think that's a useful thing to do for those, particularly for young people who are not engaging with the school system, that they're not going to leave with nothing.
Okay, very briefly, I'm afraid I can't think of anything positive that this government is doing at all. I'm sorry, but I can't. I could have been a little bit weak and said, well, yes, I suppose they've encouraged universities to continue with access agreements, but I don't find that very genuine, so therefore I can't say that. And I would say, in terms of fairness and access and opportunity, I would get rid of school league tables for a start, which means that then children and young people could learn as opposed to, and learning for knowledge's sake rather than for a school to be at the top of a league table. So that's what I'd do.
Yeah, I mean, I share the sentiment as well. I don't see much going on within the UK system at the moment that is moving us towards greater social mobility. I like the comments the young lady made in relation to adult learning and the way that she came in and was supported and fostered to learn within a university environment. I think increasingly that's disappearing. I think, you know, when you look at the number of adult education programmes that have disappeared in the UK alone within the last 10 years, it is phenomenal. And if anything else was to disappear within education as quickly as that, then there would be uproar. There would be people on the streets long before they're on the streets now. And I think it's poor. In terms of the point was made, you know, in relation to inequality, I think, yes, there's been more access to education for certain groups. I think we need to be much more targeted. But I think one of the difficulties that I've seen is that students who come from the lowest socioeconomic groups go through university, get themselves a degree, and then try to enter the employment market. They still face a lot of the bias that's already there. What university did you attend? You came through a widened access programme. That must mean there's a lot of dumbing down to allow you to come through, so you're not quite as good as the students from the traditional universities.
In relation to the UK government suggestion, well, I mean, it's not my point of reference, because the Welsh Assembly government is, and that's been very important. I mean, that those examples, Scotland and Wales, those examples of regional devolution in terms of politics have been very very important. I mean, what's happening in England isn't happening in Wales. I mean, to date, adult education for so-called targeted students who are means tested has been free. Now that may change over time, and that's the issue for us. And really, there was a new loan system introduced last week, and we're very concerned that those support, that funding support, is still in place. The fee waiver, the other grants, and so forth. So, it's been more than helpful. It's helped us survive. But adult education is vulnerable. It's been vulnerable throughout my career. When I started, it was vulnerable, and it still is. And it's been a constant fight, and it wears us out. But we stick in there, don't we? But in response to the question from up the back in terms of inequality and stuff, well, if we're not going to achieve a redistribution of wealth, I guess the only thing that's left to us is widening access, and we have to use that. And of course, there are very important benefits to people from the experience, and of course there are. I mean, they're more confident, they become more capable in terms of handling their own issues. We can stand up against all the agencies that tell them what to do and so forth. And I take the point that it's communities, individual, but there are communities of interest. I mean, communities for me aren't that sort of Thatcherite description of, well, there's not a thing as community, it's just individuals. That's not the case. There are communities of interest within communities. whether they're lone parents or asylum seekers or whatever, and we can reach out to them and we can help them. And if empowerment is the wrong way to describe it, fine, I'll throw it away, but I'll still carry on doing what we do. That example of Scotland and Wales is important in terms of the political issues, really, and it can be seen how important that is to save you from the excesses of a Westminster government. I'm not a nationalist, I'm a socialist.
Look, in our lifetime, we're going to face many, many challenges, actually. And personally speaking, I'm not a lover of politicians, and never will be. I don't understand them. I think they are one of those things, here today, gone tomorrow. For me, actually, I came as a young person from Sri Lanka. I came from a very traditional middle-class family. And when I landed in England, I suddenly found out what it's like to be marginalized and picked upon. And I did survive, actually, and I learned a lot from that. I didn't allow that to disturb my mental balance, if you like, but some of the things that I had to undergo was not very easy. My whole family, I think, had done pretty well, actually, in terms of what they have achieved educationally. And for me, that lesson has been a constant challenge. What I do is actually what I do now, what I do best, is whatever expertise I have, I shall forward it on to, whether it be asylum seekers, other immigrants, fellow colleagues. I try and help them as much as I can from my own experiences. I think we have to take, I don't believe that we must leave everything to the state, actually. They never have got it right. I don't think they ever will, actually. But I think I can make things right for myself, and I can make things right for my neighbors and my friends. And I think we should all try and do something, however small, to make a difference. I'm going to finish on that.
Mayor, thank you all, and particularly our panel, if I may, and can we show our appreciation.